I'm Alice, compulsive eater, anorexic, and bulimic. I have to say, it is so wonderful to be here in person, right? To just be surrounded by my fellows. It's just great. I'm overwhelmed by. I mean, I knew I was going to like it. I missed it terribly since we've been apart, but it's just been amazing. So when we were planning the convention, we had your typical tracks. This is your first convention, so typically we have the steps in one room and different topics. And then we had some open spaces, and so they asked people for ideas. And I was thinking of, what would I want to hear as a newcomer? What did I really need to hear? And this whole, one day at a time. When I walked in these rooms, I couldn't face the next 5 minutes. How do you get through a whole 24 hours? And so, and also to see that no matter where you start, there is a way to create an entirely new life for yourself. Because when I walked in the rooms, I didn't feel like I deserved the space that I took up in the world to the point where I was ready to kill myself. I got to the point where I knew I could not continue participating in my disease, and I had no idea how to stop. I had always thought that, I can stop at any time, but I'm just not ready yet. Until I got to the point where I knew my body couldn't take it anymore, and I was powerless to stop. So I went to my first meeting through a treatment program. Well, a mental health institute, and it wasn't for my eating disorders, because I wanted to kill myself. I couldn't go to work. I couldn't see any other way to live. I had no conception that there was any other road for me. I'd been doing it for so long. I couldn't see any of it. And I got to a point where I just want the pain to stop. I need the pain to stop. And I was fortunate enough to have someone in my life who got me where I needed to go, to hear, to see that I wasn't alone, and that this life is worth living. And there are so many other options if we just allow ourselves to accept them. So I'm just going to do a really brief where I came from kind of thing. So I was raised in a house with a very domineering Hispanic dad who was an alcoholic. To this day, he has a beer in his fridge. That's a whole other topic. And my mom worked swing shift. So we were left alone most of the day. I saw my mom in the morning. She got us ready for school. She sent us to school. I didn't see her till the next morning. And so we were basically raised by a raging alcoholic. And there were six of us. I had an older brother, but as the oldest female child, I was made to take care of everybody else. It was always, I did the cooking, the cleaning. I had to take care of everybody else's things before myself. And I took that attitude into my adult life. Anytime I tried to put myself first, I was selfish, conceited, right? My mom never gave me a compliment because she thought it would go to my head, and she didn't want me to be, So I had a really tough time trusting. If it needed to be done for me, I'm the one that had to do it, or nobody cared. Nobody would take care of me. And then from that, I was responsible for you too. Your happiness, what you needed. I was desperate for someone to care about me, to notice me, to see me. And so I became who you needed me to be. And you can tell, it's one of those you know, whatever fashion you had, that was my favorite fashion, whatever, you know, movies you liked, that was my favorite movie, you know, that just, I turned myself into who I thought you wanted me to be so that you would accept me. So by the time I came into program, I was out of ideas. I knew that I wanted something else, and I had no idea what that something else was. So I went to my first meeting when I was at this hospital, and they read from this blue book, and there was lots of God in there. We went to church every Sunday, and then we were brutalized the rest of the week. So I had a really, really hard time with that. And there was actually a woman in the meeting with me who would, like, physically react every time the God word was spoken. But what I found through program was that it's okay for me to have my own vision of my higher power. Because when I was first told that by my sponsor, I'm like, no, that's not allowed. Right? Look how, you know. And it was the first time I realized what a narrow view of the world I was brought up in. Right? And she had me write, you know, one of those what ifs. What if you had a higher power who was kind and loving and walked with you and took all of your burdens and had a vision of a life for you that you cannot even imagine? And that's the life I ended up with. But how would that feel? And it was like this 100-pound weight was lifted from my shoulders. That God didn't just have me. God has everybody. That's not my responsibility that anymore. Just to figure out what my purpose was. And it wasn't to turn myself into somebody else. And the thing is that I had no idea who I was, really. You know, I was my disease for so long. I had no idea who that little girl inside me was. So, and I have to tell you, I went to meetings, and on the day I went to a meeting, I was abstinent. Right? There was no binging, no purging, no exercises, no starving. So I was going to 6 meetings a week. But on that 7th day, it's like I never stopped. It's like I couldn't carry the recovery I felt in the rooms for more than 24 hours. And even some of those days, it was like, when's my next meeting? When's my next meeting? When's my next meeting? And I did that for 2 years. I would come this cycle over and over. I'd get in the rooms. Oh, okay, you people get me, right? And that wasn't immediate either. When I first came into the rooms, I was into my anorexia, and I had people that, and it, at that time it was an outside issue, so I had people questioning why I was even there. I didn't belong because I wasn't big like they were. And I had to fight to stay in the rooms. I knew that this is the only place for me. I knew that if this didn't work, that was it. But still, it took me two years to hear in a meeting, going to meetings 6 days a week, get a sponsor and work the steps. It's not that they didn't say it every single meeting I went to. One day, 2 years in, I heard it. There is a solution. It's in the steps. You need to work it with the sponsor, right? Because if I'm working the steps by myself, my disease is working me through the steps, right? A sponsor who's someone who's been through it before and has found the solution can walk me through. And like, my first sponsor helped me identify the difference between the voice of my higher power and the voice of my disease. And it took a lot of checking in with her to help me, because it wasn't immediate. It's so ingrained in me that I couldn't separate the two at the beginning. But now it's very obvious. Anytime I'm being self-critical or doubting, or, you know, if I disappeared, no one would miss me. Those are all the voice of my disease. My higher power wants me to be strong and healthy and have an open heart and share, find that connection with everyone in all of my affairs, when I first started, it was barely safe for me to be in a room with you. And then slowly, I was able to trust and to open up, mostly because my sponsor said, from now on, you're going to share in a meeting. And I would go to big meetings. You will raise your hand when it's time to share. So it'd be like, you know, don't pick me. Here I am, right? Because in my growing up, the only way to be safe in my home was to be invisible. And so, thank you. And so it was a lot for me. My sponsor challenged me, but in a kind and loving way. And I had the gift of desperation where I was going to do whatever she said because I knew I couldn't go back to where I was. And it took me walking through the steps with her, getting outside help. It still took me 6 months to find a long-lasting abstinence. You know, I'd stumble or slip or to find a clean, lasting abstinence. And that was, my abstinence date is February 20th, 1995. So it's been a few years. And when I walked into the rooms, I could not conceive of going 5, 10, half an hour. A half an hour seemed ridiculously, like, unattainable. So what it's like now is I am surrounded by people who love me and accept me. Like just knowing you're in OA immediately, right? And I can feel it, right? I spent so many years closed up and afraid that you were going to hurt me. And now I feel accepted and loved. And even people who are not necessarily as far along the recovery path as I am, right? So, like, I spoke this morning, filled in at the anorexic bulimic panel, and I had a fellow I've known for years say, I didn't know you were anorexic. And when I first came into the program, that would have devastated me, right? What I would have heard her say is, oh my God, you're so fat, there's no way that you restrict, right? But... But today, I was just, what a compliment that part of me doesn't show to anyone, right? That part that almost killed me is not a part of who I am anymore, right? So, a new way of living. So I worked through the steps, and as I worked through the steps with my sponsor, unbeknownst to me, I was slowly learning a daily practice, right? The big one was every day when I wake up, I take the first three steps. I remind myself that I am indeed anorexic and bulimic and that this disease will do everything it can to kill me, even today, this many years later. And I believe that I have a higher power who guides my life. And I didn't get there overnight. We'll get back to that. And then the third one, am I going to let God guide my life? I turn over my thoughts and my actions, right? My will, my thoughts, which is my will, and my actions, which is my life. And I know today that when I am irritable, restless, discontent, on my way to misery, it's because I think I know better. Because I have a clear path. I have this deal with my higher power. I need to be shown very clearly where I'm supposed to be going. And unfortunately, sometimes that means that I get like very, very strong resistance when I'm going the wrong way. Because I can be a slow learner sometimes. So if I'm ever on the way I know that it's the path I'm supposed to be on, and it's like the parting of the Red Sea, and then, oh, I'm supposed to go this way. I go easily, right? There's no obstacles. People are placed in my life that are telling me the way I'm supposed to go. And when I'm irritable, restless, discontent, on the edge of misery, it's because I see God leading me this way, I'm going that way. Because I know better. This, obviously, this is a wonderful thing that God would want me to do. I'm going this way, and then, right? Just like, oh, it just, no matter how hard I fight, it doesn't work out. And finally, it takes less and less time. I will wake up and say, okay, I get it. I'm going to go this way instead, and then all of my troubles, like, they evaporate. All of the obstacles, even personalities that I struggle with, they're like removed from the path. They're not in the one I'm supposed to go. So let's get some more to this. So that's what I do. First, take the first three before I even get out of bed, because I know cunning, baffling, and powerful. My disease is equal opportunity. Will take every opportunity it can to knock me down, to try and make me believe again that I need it, that I can't get through life without it, that it's always been there for me. How dare I turn my back on it, right? And that voice, I know, is not how my higher power would talk to me. So during the day, I also do the maintenance steps, 10, 11, and 12. So the way I was brought up, 10, when I was long, promptly admitted it. In the moment, if I'm connected with my higher power and I have done something that's going to lead me toward my disease, I get that feeling in my chest. And I'm like, dang, that was not the best choice for me. I need to make amends, and I will do it immediately. So I've seen, personal opinion, I've seen these 10-step inventories that you do at the end of the day. The way I was brought up, the 10th step is done immediately. If I get that feeling and I can't figure out, because sometimes, you know, my disease is like, don't be silly, they're fine, or, you know. I don't make my amends for you. I make them for me, because I know any little light I give my disease, it will blow up overnight. And then step 11 is when I review my day. Where did I shrink, right? Because, you know, step 10 says when we were wrong, promptly admit it, not if you are wrong, if you're ever going to be wrong again, right? You will be, in fact, make mistakes that immediately need to be made amends for. So I review the day. Where did I not find the courage to step up and own my part in it? And then I make plans to make those amends. And some days I have to make them before I go to sleep, because I know it's just going to grow in my head overnight. I'm going to wake up and be a piece of shit again, right? And I don't want that anymore. I refuse to live my life that way anymore. And then step 12, I don't have, part of step 11 is conscious contact. So mine, I don't have like a morning ritual and evening ritual. I have a 24-hour ritual where I am constantly checking in with my higher power. When things are really stressful, I have to sit and say, I need the courage to eat today. That's how strong my disease is. It's 20s, whatever years later. Still calls to me that I don't deserve to eat, that I don't deserve to that well, healthy feeling. And so I check in constantly. Say the serenity prayer. I pray for courage. Strength. Actually, strength and courage kind of go together for me, because, you know, I need that extra. I need to know my higher power is with me when I say difficult things. I can be kind and loving in everything, but sometimes the words that you say, the other person doesn't want to hear. And that's where weight comes. Weight, why am I talking, right? Does it need to be said? Am I the one that needs to be saying it, right? Because there was a period in my life where I knew, and you needed to hear it from me, right? So now I will, if I observe something or there's something I think this person would benefit from, I will say, have you talked to your sponsor about that? or outside in the world? Have you considered blah, 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 right? But I don't stay in your life 24/7 until you fix this, because I know. You know. One of the big things I do when I'm indecisive is I pause, right? Is this really what God wants for me today? And again, oh, thank you. I wanted to allow enough time for sharing. But again, this is not something that happened overnight for me, right? I did not trust anyone or anything to care for me when I walked in. And so giving over, I learned to do the footwork and give credit to God for what happened, for the outcome. And so the trust built and built until today. I absolutely trust my higher power will care for me. My higher power will walk me through whatever it is I'm facing. I believe in free will because I want to have choices in my life. And it is dishonest for me to expect God to stop war, or, you know, stop famine, or children dying, or that kind of thing. Those two things don't go together, but I know that my higher power is here to walk me through whatever is happening and to help me walk beside someone else who's going through a similar thing that I went through, or that I'm going to learn what it's like to walk through this, because I'm not going to run from you. Right? It's one of the big lessons that I've gotten from working my program, is that when something devastating happens to another person, people don't know what to do, and they leave. And the last thing you need during that time is to feel abandoned, right? Even if all I do is sit with you silently while you cry, feel your feelings, or we sit in silence and have a cup of tea, I'm going to be there with you. You just have to ask. And that's another thing I learned in program, is to ask. Because it was too hard to ask, because you were going to say no, because that's the house I grew up in. Didn't matter what I asked, no. It was a joke that I would go and try, I would work up the courage to go ask my dad for something that, frankly, everybody else would think was reasonable. Before I even opened my mouth, he would say no. And he thought that was funny. And another amazing gift of the program is that I have a kind, loving relationship with my parents today. Because through the working the steps and my outside help, I was able to forgive them. They did the best they could, which wasn't good enough. But the fact is that I wouldn't have this life. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for them. So the very least I owe them is my existence on earth. And I have, with this program and the help of my higher power, I've built a life beyond my wildest dreams. And that ability to forgive these two people, not just to forgive them, but to be able to build a loving, caring relationship with them, it's just been a true miracle, like beyond even the healing of my own body, mind, and spirit. It's just been such a gift to me. But I've spoken more than I planned to already, so, and I think there are going to be questions, or, anyway, thank you for letting me share. Go ahead.
Could you talk more about like how you developed your trust and faith in a higher power?
Mm-hmm.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. So the question was to speak more about how I built my faith and trust in my higher power, right? So in the big book, it talks about the spiritual experience at the end of the book. If you haven't read it, it's a pretty excellent piece of writing. But they talk about the being struck, you know, that whole thing. That was not my experience. Mine, like I said, my ability to trust was so lacking that it took baby steps. You know, I would give it away, I would take it back. I would give it away, I would take it back. And it was just a process of faith. I mean, you know, the leap of faith. They're not killing. I mean, they're not kidding. There were times when I decided to trust, where it felt like I was jumping off a cliff with no net. But the thing that kept me going was knowing I'm not going back to where I was, and the way forward is through. The way forward is through. Like they say, courage isn't lack of fear. It's feeling the fear and doing it anyway. And so I had it. So I guess the short answer is I acted as if, right? I am going to assume, which I know what they say about that. That's why it's a leap of faith. I am going to have faith and trust that this action I'm about to take is going to be supported when I get to the other side, right? So really, it's really about just putting yourself out there, feeling the feelings, feeling the fear, and walking through it anyway. And you get to the other side, and you're like, oh, I'm alive. And not only am I alive, but I'm in such a better place I couldn't even envision that helps you build to the next step. Yes? Oh, sure.
Stephen, I'm a compulsive addict, sugar and carb. Or a compulsive overeater, sugar and carb addict, I should say. And I was going to make a comment. I was going to say anyway, but it piggybacks really nicely on the question and your answer. I have a lot of struggles with recovery, of course. There's a lot of different things I need to work on. Probably two of the hardest is turning my life over to my higher power and having him remove my, my issues, my character defects, in short, step three and step seven. So I have on my mirror at home a little piece of paper that has a third step prayer on one side and a seventh step prayer on the other. And it allows me the opportunity to say those prayers every morning. I use the word opportunity because I'd like to say that I've been, got in the habit of doing it every morning religiously, no pun intended. But I'm trying to do it more often than not, in hopes that I get there daily. But that is one way I'm trying to kind of remind myself on a daily basis that I need that higher power in my life to make this work, to make anything in my life.
Thank you. So, go ahead.
So, I wasn't sure you're answering.
What?
Are you answering a question?
No.
Okay. Sorry, I'm on everything else with you.
Hi.
What do you tell yourself when you find yourself in judgment of others?
Judgment of others?
Could you create a question?
Oh, sorry. What do I tell myself when I find myself in judgment of others? So my go-to is, this is a sick person who needs my prayers, right? Bless them, change me, right? Because it's all in my head. And I also remember how I felt coming in the rooms initially, right? That whole, what are you doing here? People telling me, I wish I had what you had. That when people said that, I knew they had no idea, right? You have no idea the torment that goes on. Well, you guys do, but the person saying that, it was obvious to me they had no idea the torment and torture that goes on in your head when you are consciously overriding your body's natural instinct to feed itself. When you have gotten to that level that you just cannot for the life of you eat, you wouldn't wish that on anyone. And so when I was strong enough and that would happen, I would say, our diseases is the same. I wouldn't wish this on anyone. Just because my physical appearance may be different than yours, that crazy insanity that goes on in your head that tells you you are your weight or you're not good enough unless I weigh whatever, right? And I don't weigh myself. I used to weigh myself like 10 times a minute. No kidding, right? Let's take this off. Wait, let's run around the block. Wait, just like, I better not drink that. I'm about to get on the scale. I mean, it was insanity, right? And my sponsor said, get rid of your scale. I'm like, what? So we don't have one. Well, we do, but it's because my son just moved out, so I should probably get rid of that scale again because he's, well, that's a whole other thing, but. A big thing is I am not my weight. My weight, the size of my clothes, has absolutely nothing to do with my value to my human being, to my the people around me, right? I am here. I have found that my purpose here is to share my experience and to offer hope to those around me, right? And not just in these rooms, right? There's this song that one of the lyrics is, I go to get coffee in the morning just to get a hello. There are a lot of lonely people out there, and just walking by someone and just saying hello, how's your day? Or in the elevator when you don't want to talk, look at each other, like, you know, hi, why are you here? And people want to be seen. Even when they're hiding right in front of you, we long to be seen and to be heard and to mean something. And one of the slogans of this program is, we'll love you until you love yourself. And that is such a truth. We come in here craving that love and have no idea how to get it for ourselves, right? I went to a speaker once. She said, if anything, show up for the love. Because that's what you get when you walk in. Just show up for the love. So another thing I tell myself during the day, today I'm going to show up for the love. Right? And part of the way I can bring that love is to say, hello, how are you doing today? And frankly, there are times when I'm certain personalities where, okay, God, give me the courage to really listen to what this person is about to say. Right? But that is why I'm here. To offer hope. I'm an available sponsor, by the way. I can give it to you after. Oh, sorry. I'm supposed to be answering questions. I'm just talking again. Sorry, go ahead.
do you have any sort of tricks of the trade of, like, when you know that you're overdoing it and you have to
pull back,
maybe give somebody up change the situation? What do you do?
Well, like I said, I'm a slow learner. It's like it took me 2 years to quit a job a situation I shouldn't have been in. Oh, sorry. So the question was, what are the tricks that you use when you know you need to make a change, or to become aware that you need to make a change? Is that, yeah. Right.
Because other people matter more than me, you know.
Right. So you know that you need to make the change, but the fear of how it's going to impact those around you keeps you from, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, like I said, I was in a job 2 years longer than I should have been because I didn't feel the courage enough to put myself first. And again, like I said, that's one of those ingrained core values that I'm trying to reprogram, right? But I pray for the courage and the strength, and I practice, right? A friend of mine says practice makes permanent. So if I have I need to make a difficult conversation, I pull a trusted fellow aside and I practice. This is what I need to say to this person, right? And just because when I first came into the program, I couldn't even get any words out at all. Like, I was like a blubbering mess. You're lucky if you can understand anything I was saying, but I needed to find a way to speak my truth because I was so afraid to speak my truth. And now I have to speak my truth because I know that's where my disease lives in me hiding myself. You have a question?
Hi, I'm David. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, David.
Question. When you were in the mental hospital, did you rock bottom or did a light bulb come on?
I actually... okay, so we asked if when I was in the hospital, was that my rock bottom and did the light bulb come on? Is that correct what you said? Okay, so believe it or not, that was not my rock bottom. I actually... it was difficult in the fact that we went to the doctor, and ironically, the eating disorder guy wasn't there. There was another doctor, and he says, well, you look fine. Go home, right? And I went home, and the man that ended up being my husband took me back the next day, and we saw someone else, and she said, she asked me the right question. Are you suicidal? Are you going to harm yourself? And I had to say yes, and my boyfriend at the time was shocked. You know, when you feel so desperate, you are sure that you're emanating it, and everybody knows exactly how you feel, and he had no clue. But I actually found hope there for the first time. It was 12-step based. I was introduced to the concept of recovery. I found hope there. My rock bottom happened a couple years later, I think. A year later? Things were going great. I was in recovery. My husband and I got pregnant. We were so excited. And then we lost the baby in my second trimester. And I remember this feeling that something was wrong. And I'm like, God, come on. You gave my dad 6. I just want 1, you know. What if I went back to that. I didn't mention it before. I always had this gut feeling that I did something wrong. That is why God's doing this to me, right, as a kid. That idea that the sun shines, God's love shines on all the houses in our neighborhood except for ours. There's this big cloud over ours. Like, what did I do, right? And I fell back into that. I immediately relapsed, and it almost killed me. That was my last relapse. Because, again, for the first time, I got down on my knees, and I said, God, help me. There's got to be more than this. There's got to be more than this. I thought it was having a baby was the more. But it turned out that I personally believe I wasn't recovered enough yet. And now I have 3 amazingly well-adjusted. They have their issues. But there are these amazing these people in the world, just out there, you know. And I give my higher power in this program the credit for that, because I had a place to go. I had people to share with. I had a sponsor. You know, I don't know how to parent. I know how I don't want to. I know how what I don't want to do. But, you know, and what the reality is that you could be, in your eyes, everything that you needed, and your kids still have problems. And you know what? They have a higher power, too. They have a force that's helping them and guiding them, and I'm there alongside them to walk them through. Because, again, practice in all of my affairs, in everyone that crosses my path. Because I know, I've learned in program, is that if someone crosses my path, they're there for a reason. They're going to help me. I'm going to help them. We're going to learn from each other. Sometimes I don't see it right away. And again, what are you doing? I don't understand what's going on. Why would you make me do this kind of thing? But, you know, it's that incremental trust and reminding myself, oh, remember that time when blah, 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 and then it turned out this was exactly the person that you needed to hear from? Remembering those times, building that trust. So I don't even remember what the question was now, so I'm sorry.
I just want to make a comment. Your sharing today has been incredibly impactful to me, and I want to thank you for being so brave and sharing yourself. And everything you said just spoke to me, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it very much. And just to let you know, even all these years later, this is when the shame attack starts, right? That I just... But, you know, I have my people that I will run to after this and get my hug, and maybe all of you that, you know what, it's that shame is the leftover pieces of my disease that are still there, and, you know. And one of the things I wrote down here was word choices that I forgot to speak about, but that the words that I choose in my head and come out of my mouth make a huge difference, that... One of the greatest blessings was when my daughter was born, because I got to put my experience on an actual little person. Like, I was that when a little teeny three-year-old. That was the first memory of spanking from my dad, you know. And I, you know, just, and how she grew and being able to see this is what happened, you know. I don't know if I explained that very well, but seeing true in my own eyes that was not okay. That was not okay for you to say that to me when I was this age, when I was a teenager and in the middle of my anorexia, that, you know, you think you lost weight, turn around, I'll find it. Who says that to a kid? No. And so when my daughter was born, and I, and my sponsor said, if you would not say it to your daughter, you will not say it to yourself. And same with the food. If you would not serve that to a friend coming over, that doesn't count as a meal. So, you know, putting myself, being of service and using that to help my own recovery. That was like the very beginning of it. Right, so. Any other questions? We have 4 minutes before we're supposed to be completely over, so.
Did you have issues with the male species, basically, and like how did you? Because I know that I project onto innocent men, and it's not their fault, and I know it's within me, but I still do it, and I don't know.
That's where I got the help outside the program. Oh, sorry. Thank you. So, have I had issues with men? And sorry, repeat the question.
Do you find that you project onto innocent men?
Right. So, do I project my beliefs onto innocent men?
From what you've been through.
So that's where I got my outside help, right? So therapy, well, station is part of my story, so I went to a group for that, and just a lot of, a lot of the program is about accepting my part in it, and in certain things, my part in it was I didn't speak up, right? I didn't tell my truth. I kept it inside. I hid. That was my part. The other stuff, the actions that other people did, that's their stuff. I don't have any responsibility. I don't have any part in what happened. My part is how I kept it a secret, right? It was the outside, and it's hard work. It is hard work to face whatever's happened and to work through it and to own that you are a precious, precious person. And there's a reason that you're here. And that the whole world is not this horrible person or this thing that happened to you. That there's a whole life out there. And to open your heart up to the possibilities of what life can be. That's huge. And it's not easy, but it's the best work I ever did. It's what gave me my life. And I was, Tana talked last night about building your OA community. I know, Cunning, Baffling, Powerful, there are people in program who know that if I disappear, they're calling me. They're coming to my door. They're not going to let me go. And that's part of building our community, is that we're there for each other, no matter what's going on. That we don't run, that we can be there, that it's not too hard. It's not too hard. You can do this one day at a time, 5 minutes at a time, right? When you're in a meeting, you're abstinent, right? That's what got me to the meetings 6 days a week. And I would go at lunchtime. It was a face-to-face, bring your lunch. So there's like, what are you eating, you know, that kind of thing. But you know what? I learned to be with people while I was eating. And that's a huge step for an anorexic, right? Just So it's, I guess if I'm going to whittle it down to the constant contact, it's the honesty. And it's the doing the hard things and knowing that you're going to walk through it and you're going to be a better person. You're going to be more the person that God made you to be in the first place before your disease robbed that of you. So we're actually out of time. So thank you all for being here.
Faster.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.